Hi, this is Dr. Kimberly Leonard, author of Visualizing Happiness in Every Area of Your Life and host of this podcast, Incredible Life Creator. And today I have Miss Ashton Rodenheiser with me. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great. Hailing all the way from Canada, where they had a snow
Yes,
day yesterday.
it is correct. Yeah. So now the frantic energy you're trying to get caught up when basically taking the day off with the kids and playing in the snow. Yeah.
Yeah, so let me read your bio so people know who you are, and then you can tell us your story. So, Ashton Rodenheiser is passionate about lifting the creative spirit in everyone that she meets. She has followed her passion for helping people communicate their ideas and combined with creativity. And over the years, she has brought over 3,000 presentations and conversations to life, either on paper or digitally. She's now on a mission to show people the benefits of sketchnoting. She's the founder of Sketchnote School, where lifelong learners use visual to help them understand, retain, and share complex information while having fun. When she's not working with students and clients, she's being silly with her three young kids and husband in rural Canada. All right, so tell us about you, how you started, how you got to get into sketchnoting, because I've never heard of sketchnoting.
Yeah. So when I was in high school and everybody was trying to decide what they wanted to be for the rest of their life, like as a career, I really didn't know. I was struggling big time. And the only thing that I really felt pretty grounded in was being a mom. I really wanted to be a mom at some point. So, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do after high school, but I knew I wanted to do something, I decided to take early childhood education. And it was a 2-year program. And after that program was done, I remember being there on like the last day and being like, I don't really know if I like want to work with kids in this capacity. What have I just done? This was probably a bad decision. But yeah, I was sort of inspired to take it because I was like, well, I'll have my own kids someday, so like I'll know things, which is awful because you're your own worst enemy when you know things. And so I got a job at a nonprofit family resource center in the city. So I moved to the city and I ended up working there for about 4 years. And while I was there, I transitioned from working with the kids and then to working more with the families and the parents in a facilitator role. And I didn't know facilitation really was a thing at the time, but I was introduced to it and I totally fell in love. I loved how you could bring people together, ask questions, create a safe space for people to have conversations. And it's really about the ideas and their feelings and thoughts and wisdom and learning from each other and learning from their own ideas that are spoken aloud. And so I really decided I wanted to kind of like follow this facilitation path a little bit more when I left that work. So I moved back to my hometown and started seeking out opportunities where I could do more facilitation. And that was more so in volunteer roles. So I started volunteering at a lot of different organizations. And trying to beef up some of my facilitation skills. And I met a fellow facilitator, and he told me about this term graphic facilitation, which I had no idea what it was at the time. But there was a 1-day workshop, and I attended that. And honestly, the rest was history. And that was over 10 years ago. I totally fell in love with how you can, hear a room, hear information, hear a presentation, hear a conversation. And not just feedback in words like you would in a as a facilitator, but now you can feedback in pictures, right? And I was doing a facilitation project at the time, and I just started putting paper on the walls, and I'm like, I don't really know what I'm doing. I just took this 1-day workshop, but I still don't really know what I'm doing. And I was really blown away by looking at some of those graphics I created like a few months later, and how much I could remember, and where people sat, and the conversations beyond what I captured. And I was like, wow, this isn't just like a fun, cute drawing thing. I was like, this is like a really powerful tool for learning and communicating. So, after just sort of playing around with it for a few years, I decided, you know what, I really want to try to make a proper go of this and create a business and see where I could take it. And then here I am all these years later.
Wonderful. So let's just start out by you describing even a little more about what is sketchnoting.
So I find it so interesting because when we're all in these different industries, we have all these different words that we like to use that nobody understands, right? And that's exactly what you're saying here with sketchnoting. And so there's a few different terms. There's graphic facilitation is more like I'm in a room and there's people in there talking and I'm drawing as people are saying things. So like maybe it's a strategic planning session or some sort of brainstorming. There's like multiple voices. Sometimes, usually, it's facilitated in some way. Maybe there's a co-facilitator and they're like leading the questions and making those connections for people. And I'm there either digitally or on paper, like literally drawing pictures, writing the keywords, and creating like a cohesive image of what was just said. Now there's like live illustration underneath that is like live illustration or graphic recording, where it's more of like a presentation, like a conference, let's say, where people are like there's a person on stage and I'm off to the side drawing the picture. When the presentation's done, I'm done. And now you have a visual representation of like one single voice or like a panel of voices, right? It's less of a facilitated conversation and more like someone has information they're going to give to a crowd or a group of people. And then underneath that is visual note taking or sketch noting. And that's where we can use the same skill set pretty much that I use as a professional, but you can do it for more personal, right? So let's say you're listening to the presentation or you're in a meeting or you're trying to think about something, right? Putting pen to paper and not just using words, but using icons and drawings and lines and boxes and little people and maybe color. To sort of bring your own thinking to life or the own information that you're hearing to life and how it resonates with you personally, rather than as a professional, I'm listening for like a room or a collective, right? I'm not necessarily writing down my own aha moments and how I relate to this information as a professional, but as for sketchnoting, you can kind of harness all the benefits that I do as a professional, but do it for yourself.
I mean, would people do this when they're reading a book, or is it always just listening to something?
Yeah, so you could do it for anything that you listen to, like a podcast or a presentation or kind of anything where you're listening. You could also use it for reading as well, right? So articles. I love actually doing books. I just finished a book that I did and created a YouTube video about it and everything, which is fun. And yeah, so basically wherever information is coming at you. Or you can draw your own thinking. Like some people that I work with, some of my students, they use it mostly for complexity, right? They use it in their work and they're like, I need to explain this complex topic to my supervisors or what have you. Or I'm trying to understand this complex thing and I'm having a hard time understanding it. So they'll use drawing as a thinking tool in those ways to help them try to build understanding. Because sometimes we, stay in our heads a lot and we're like, I'm going to figure out my goals. And then you never write them down, right? And I think there's a lot of conversation. I think people understand like the general, like, oh yeah, you should write down your goals or you should write down things that are in your head. This is just taking a little bit step further of visualizing it because most people think in pictures, right? It resonates with a lot of people and it gives people permission, I think, to go back to, I think, how we naturally could be capturing information. Like, I think we've just gone a little bit too far to the other end of like words only, and words only are going to tell you so much. Right. But a picture is going to tell you more, right? Like the saying, picture's worth a thousand words, right? So I feel like it's more of our default mode, but we have gone out of it and we see it as not serious work when we're doodling or drawing a picture or what have you.
Yeah, and recently I went to it was a quite extensive course on NLP. It was a master course, and part of it, what we did is we wrote, actually we could write or do pictures. So I did pictures on one side of this board of what we wanted, and on the other side of the board, what our obstacles were. And of course, we were smashing through it. But I remember doing that board, and I like art and doing art. But when I have to do something quickly, I mean, my doodles look more like a first grader. So I'm thinking, when you're doing this thing, does it have to look artistic, or when people do it, does it look like it's supposed to, or does it just look?
It's such a funny thing. Like, I do teach aesthetics, right? Because people care about what it looks like. And I don't mind because if it means they'll do it again and again and again and experience the benefits from it, then that's fine by me, right? Like, if they want it to be somewhat beautiful, that's okay. I try to encourage people like not to worry about it, especially in the beginning when they're new and they're trying to draw things out and it doesn't look the way that they want it to. Right, like Lisa Condon in her book, Find Your Artistic Voice, talks about this like beginner's gap where there's the skill you want in the future, but you want it right now, right? So when you do something, it doesn't match the expectation that you want to have, like, somebody like me, maybe like 10 years in, right? And you've got this huge gap. And the issue is most people do not travel that gap. Most people, they try it once. And they're like, no, it's ugly. I don't like it. And they might not be saying this to themselves, but they're like, it doesn't match the level of expectation that I had, right? And then they give up. They're like, no, the gap's too wide. Not gonna cross it, right? So I do try to, when I'm teaching it to people, teach aesthetics for some like quick wins. So it like looks pretty decent even right from the beginning, right? And I even try to encourage people like, when I'm doing trainings and things, just I'm like, just copy mine. Like, just absolutely copy it. Don't feel like you have to make your own. Like, I'll draw, like, I do this one workshop, like, draw your first sketch note. And I'm like, just copy mine, right? Because then I find after they create that first one and they can see it and they're like, oh wow, I drew that. Look at that, right? And it builds up that confidence to do it again, right? And it's okay that it's totally, the whole thing is copied. Right, because you're building your visual vocabulary and your visual language in your mind, so that it's like once you draw a light bulb and then you draw a light bulb again, you draw it again, it starts to solidify in your mind. So when you're in a situation where there's an aha moment or a big idea, you're like, I could draw a light bulb for that, right? I already know how to draw it. I have confidence drawing it. It's not going to look too bad, So the aesthetics is definitely something that I wish wasn't such a desire for people, but I think it's just the nature, right? We want it to look nice right from the beginning. So I try to help people and give people tools to be able to do that. But I also think like conversations are messy, right? We get ourselves into these places and it's not clear, right? And sometimes I have to warn clients like, yeah, okay, this like graphic that I did for something else as an example is like, it's really beautiful, but this conversation we're entering seems complicated and messy. And just so you know, my graphic could be complicated and messy. I could always create a final one later if you want me to, but it has to, when I'm doing it for someone else, like it has to serve the group and be meaningful to them, right? And if that conversation's all like, even when I'm doing speakers, sometimes if they're the speakers all over the place, I'm default all over the place. Like, there's nothing you can do about it, right? So, like, there's a little bit of magic to it, but you're not that much of a magician, right? Like, you can't, you can only do what you can in those types of situations. But yeah, I think there's still a lot of, I don't know, awesomeness, let's say, in creating a messy drawing and creating a drawing that is not beautiful, is not pretty, as long as it serves you for the purpose that you need it to. And, our drawings also don't have to be precious, right? We have to kind of like redefine what drawing is as this thinking tool, like I mentioned, and less of this like precious thing that we have to hold on forever or it's not good enough or what have you. So I think in its own right, trying to redefine what drawing is and trying to not put too much pressure on ourselves that has to be beautiful.
I was thinking, like, when you do something for a group, like you talked about, like, maybe a conference meeting or something. And I thought, well, if five people witness an accident, they all have a different story, right? So when you put this into a picture form, when people look at the picture, do they still all get a different story?
It,
Are they
well, it,
looking at the same?
it's an interesting question because I think, everyone comes with their own bias, their own stories, their own history of whatever that thing is, right? So if you're, especially for like a presentation, there's going to be certain things that resonate with certain people for different reasons. So when they see that, the story that I captured or the whatever that graphic was representing, it's going to mean something different to everybody else, right? So, which is like kind of like extra challenging when you're doing it for others. You're trying to be very high level about it while also trying to get some details and trying to capture the whole. But when you're doing it for yourself, that's where you can add in your own things. Like your light bulb with your aha moment might be different than someone else's. They might listen to the same presentation, but have a completely different takeaway based on the lens that they're looking through with their history and their bias and their experience and all of those things. Right.
So if you're working, let's say, for a nonprofit or a corporation for their meetings or something where they're making business decisions, how is that used? So you're in there, you're doing the sketch note, and then I'm guessing it's distributed to everyone so they can see what it is. And how do they use that?
Yeah, so I'll talk about in the moment, for example. So in the benefit of being doing it live in the moment is that people get to see it unfold, right? Whereas most of the times we're having conversations and we're talking in circles and there's someone off to the side taking minutes, but we don't see how some of these conversations connect, right? So when you see it live, like on a wall or on a screen, you can reflect on it in the moment, right? And clarify things and see the connections that you might not have seen when just having a conversation, right? So and to answer your question, like how people use it, I think there's the conversation in the moment can be really beautiful in a way that people can make connections and get clarification in the moment and be like, no, Ashton, you drew that wrong. Doesn't happen very often, luckily, but they're like, no, actually, this connects to this, right? So it allows for that in the real time connection of information or disconnection, be like no, or and correction of things, right? And then because everybody was there, it's like a shared understanding, right? People might still have their different takeaways, but because usually at the end we like look at it and go, what, and hopefully we have time if depending on what the session is like, if it's like a whole day, we have lunchtime. I teach people at the beginning of the day how to interact with me so that they can get the most out of it too. I'm like, please come up to me. Please tell me if I spelled something wrong. Please tell me if I need to make a connection here. Please, please interact with me because this is yours at the end of the day, right? So there's sort of that, engagement in the real time in the, and now because you have that shared understanding, then hanging it on a, lunchroom wall makes more sense because it's like, okay, well, if you're talking about your vision for the next year or something like that, it's just that constant reminder. It's like, oh, right, I was at that meeting. Yes, that's our vision. Yes. Right. So it becomes like subliminal if you kind of have it around, or some people will email it out to the attendees and they'll print a copy for their office, or they'll have it as their background on their screen or what have you. Whereas, trying to keep it front of mind as much as possible, because what happens is a typical meeting that didn't have this, a report is written and then put in a drawer, never to be seen again. It's harder to like hang a report on a wall and be like, oh yeah, that's what we talked about, even though it's like 10 pages or 20 pages long, right? And you're not gonna like go through it all the time, right? I think reports still have their place. I just don't write them. Someone else can write them. I'm like, you're gonna get the graphic, that's all you need, right? But sometimes details are important and they can do that if they want to. But having that sort of graphic forefront is important. Some organizations will use it as some of their marketing, or they'll use it on their website to, if it's a graphic that is showing their mission, vision, values, they can use it in that way, to communicate to their customers what it is that they do or some of their values and things like that. So, I'm always really surprised at the different ways that people use them, right? And I think, yeah, we're just kind of scratching the surface on some of those different ways.
So not everyone who's listening can see this, but I can see one of your graphics behind you, and there is a lot going on in that graphic. And I think to myself, okay, when you start one of these sketch notes, where do you start on the paper? How do you know you're going to be have enough room on this side to do this concept and this side of this? How do you even start or know where to go with it?
Yeah, I think it's actually a beautiful exercise in letting go of control, to be honest with you. You're a little bit of a control freak. You should try it out because it's gonna like slap you in the face. All I usually start with is the title. I really like to make a nice title. So I start with so ahead of time of the event, either it's on per or paper or digital, start with the title. There's a logo that needs to be done. I always like to do that in the beginning so it doesn't, lose space. If I don't lose space and end up filling in where it should go. And then the name of the speaker, or speakers or event or whatever it is. So sometimes the date's important, but not always. So you could put the date on it as well. So that's all I start with. And then honestly, I just start in the upper left-hand corner and just see what happens. My style is very unplanned. I like it that way. I started out doing that way. I just have a lot of practice doing that way. That can be very intimidating for people. I do give people like tips and tricks on like how to manage their space or how to plan if that's required. Usually it's easier to plan space so you don't run out of room if you have a time limit. So you're like, okay, this present, so the one behind me is like, was a fireside chat with Adam Grant at a educational organization. They had a conference and it was like an hour. I was like, okay. So I could look at that one and be like, it's an hour. I need to make sure that, over time you kind of get used to like, okay, how big do I write? How big are the letters and things like that? So you can kind of concise it. But the, a very simple way you could do is you could look at your paper in quarters, 15 minutes per quarter, and you could keep an eye on the time and be like, okay, he's 15 minutes in. I'm going to try to stay within this first quarter if I can, and then move to the next 15 minutes. When they get to, 8:15, you're like, okay, let's like bleed into the next quarter and then in the next one. That can be like a general guide for people if you're kind of doing it in more of like an emergent style, like the way that I like to do it. When you're doing it at the same time, you have to try to also like create a lot of space because if you capture something, if you capture everything like all really, really tight together, but then like 10 minutes later, an idea connects to an idea that was said 10 minutes earlier and you don't have room, that's not a good time, right? You can always like have a big line across your page and be like, these belong together or something like that. Like that's where that like, this beauty versus not beauty kind of conversation comes in. But yeah, you can kind of play around a little bit with managing your space in that way, but also trying to leave spaces so that you can always like, oh, that idea connected. I'm gonna sneak it back where he's something he said in the beginning, or add a little drawing here so I can remember that he had multiple ideas on this one idea or something like that. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So I'm wondering if this can be used in like counseling or mediation or even negotiation, where it would help people see where they're actually in alignment with each other and maybe do you ever use it for things like that?
I personally haven't, But I actually, on the other side of Canada, I do know of a person, and she uses it as a mediator. She's a mediator, and that she uses this in her mediation practice. So I think there's a lot of any time where you're trying to like understand something or get understanding about something or trying to learn something, right? That in itself has like, wide implications or areas of where you can go with it, right? So I honestly, as an industry, I feel like we have barely scratched the surface on the different use cases for it. I've been talking to people and having special guests in my community around like, information design, like instructional design and nature journaling and self-care and mindfulness, and like using this for so many different ways that, yeah, I honestly feel like we haven't even explored all of them.
What if I wanted to learn something? So many of us go to YouTube to learn something, but sometimes even after watching YouTube, you're
Yeah.
still like,
Still confused.
you feel like you're missing steps, or you're not quite getting it. Can it be used for something like that? Or how do you use it to learn something new?
Let's take the YouTube video as an example. I think when people are just starting out, like when I'm teaching folks, I encourage people to do TED Talks because TED Talks are highly produced, polished presentations, right? So that's kind of like the epitome of like a perfectly designed presentation, in my opinion. There's going to be a difference between a TED talk and a random YouTube video trying to learn something, right? So to help people ease into it, I try to encourage them to do a TED talk. If they're like, "Ooh, I want to try doing this live. It's kind of scary. I don't know." And TED talks are typically not very long, right? There's some that are like micro TED talks that are like less than 10 minutes, and then they're, what are they usually like? No more than 30, sometimes longer, I guess. But I think those can be a nice, gentle way into getting into it. A YouTube channel on a random video on a YouTube channel might be a little bit more challenging because they might not even know that they missed steps, right? Or they left out steps on purpose so that you like go by the program or something, right? So, but when you're if you're doing a sketch note of that YouTube video, I believe that those steps become a little bit more apparent. You're like, okay, they did these steps, but then you see where there's a gap. Maybe the person creating the YouTube video didn't even know that there was a gap. So like the example I'll give is like when I was writing my book, The Beginner's Guide to Sketchnoting, there were things that I wrote in the book, but because I did use beta readers, they told me where I was missing all the gaps. I had no idea, right? Because when you're in it for so long, you're trying to write beginner content, actually very difficult, right? But like I just honestly did not know that the things that I thought were a little bit more common sense were not common sense, right? So, you could do that. I could have, instead of writing the book, I could have done a YouTube video and be like, "Here's the steps," and then get all these comments being like, "But what about this?" Be like, "Oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that," right? So, I think it makes the learning and the gaps in that learning just more apparent. Right? You're like, "Oh my gosh, I really learned this thing and it was really amazing, but I still have a question about this." So can that YouTube, maybe that YouTube person like answers it in another video, or you go searching for that, right? Because now it's a little bit more apparent what it is that you're missing. So I think like the tool can be really beneficial for your learning, but then also just like in that facilitated exercise I was describing where you're seeing the disconnections, or that need for clarification, it shows to you very apparently.
Makes sense. So I'm thinking about if I have a situation where I have to make a decision. Sometimes in NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming for people who don't know, we call it parts. Part of me wants this and part of me wants that. And so you have to, and you have to, and sometimes it looks good over here, it looks good over here, but some things don't look good over here, some things don't go look good over here. And basically, I have to choose to do something. So, how can that be used for, I don't know, thinking through things or decision making?
Yeah, I think there's probably lots of different approaches, but even just getting it out of your head can be really helpful. And there is science that backs up the benefit of writing things down rather than typing things out, right? So I think, writing things down, sketchnoting kind of ways of working can be beneficial and leveraged in situations exactly like that, where it's very complex, the information is very like scattered and you can't think about all the different ways. But once you start capturing things down, then you can see how different ideas connect and it might make you think of a different idea. It's like when you're talking to someone about a problem you have, right? And then you come to a new realization just because you're talking out loud. Right. I think it's the same sort of process, right? You're writing things down and then you're thinking, oh my gosh, I just thought of this issue with this choice, right? That I can write down. And then you could have like two different sides of your paper. Like, here's one part, here's the other part. And where are some of those things in the beginning? Or, you could color code it. It doesn't even have to be like super drawings, but like even just color, okay, this part is in blue, this part is in green, and everything that is similar is in yellow or something like that, right? Or the positive, more the positives, more the negatives, and then see how many, I guess that's more like pro con list kind of thing. But, I think there's different ways that you could approach it. I think just usually the hesitation is just putting pen to paper in the first place, right? Like sometimes you don't even have to have a plan, right? You just need to write it down. You can use like the first drawing element that I teach is just like a line, right? So like even just using some lines to help make connections and separations and this thought, and then I thought about this thought and showing direction of flow, like just using a line, right? It doesn't even have to be. I think when I start introducing sketchnoting, people are surprised of like, the basic elements are pretty darn basic, right? Like a line and a box and a circle, right? I don't even teach like icons and actual drawing anything until like way later because you have to get those foundational things down, right? So even just like writing some words, using some lines and some different use of color, I think in itself could really help kind of help you in your thinking. Yeah. And not, words are great. Words are always going to be really important. The information always going to be really important. But if you can bring it to life a little bit visually, I think that can be really helpful too.
Right. So this is the time of year when, we put our goals up in January, and January 31st came, so some of us aren't doing our goals anymore. So
Right.
if we wanted to set our goals with this, no matter what time of year it is, because a lot of people are like looking back and going, oh, I need to reset a goal. It's just March, April, and I already forgot, my goals. So how is this used for goal setting and something we could put on the wall and see? Like you said, sometimes the words, I mean, we put it up on our wall and we see the words, but this would be much more meaningful.
Yeah, so you could create a sketch note of like, here's my year, and it could be very permanent. You can hang it on the wall. Like, I think there's a lot of, you can use some things simple, like we just talked about, like lines and boxes and put things in containers and things like that. My approach is it's interesting that you said, in April we forget or a goal changes. So the way that I actually like to do it is very basic in the sense of I have a board with vision written at the top and like a fancy banner. And then I have circle pieces of paper that I write my goal on and I might draw a little drawing on it, maybe not, depends. And I stick it with like tape or sticky tack or whatever on the board. And then that allows me the freedom and flexibility to change things at any time because I can just remove that paper, replace it with a new goal based on that topic. Like I was like, oh, an income goal, or like, oh, whatever it is. Like, so you can just like literally take the paper off and replace it with a new one. which is really fun. So, and I have like different colors of this, like, these circle papers, like different colors. So it's like very visually nice to look at, but, and it's always changing because I'm like, oh, I'm going to move this over here and I'm going to change this one and things. So it never really always looks the same, which then, kind of catches your attention too. You're like, oh, right, I changed that goal. Right. Because sometimes you have to acclimate to things like that. You're like, the beginning of the year, you're like, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to make this much money, or this is what's going to happen. And then when you change it, then you have to shift to that thinking a little bit. Like, oh, no, never mind. I'm stretching myself a little bit. I put up that new goal. Right. When you have it up there. So I like to take that sort of more engaging approach to it. And it's less about, like, for me, I might have like a folder on my computer that has like pictures, and so I can think, so I can see like, oh, this is the type of cabin I'd like to own or something like that. But I don't incorporate those on sort of my vision board. I kind of keep something separate for that because then I can also change those. I'm like, no, actually, I want this one now. I'm going to stretch myself and do that or what have you. So I think that's my personal approach. It's worked for me. I like it, the emergent part of it. But yeah, like it's always fun at the beginning of every year to see everybody's like interpretation of what that's going to look like for them. Yeah.
So now you have a sketch note school in a community online. Why don't you talk about that and what that's all about?
Yeah, so Sketchnote School is my online community where people who want to learn sketchnoting either for their work or their life. Most people consider themselves and who join the community like lifelong learners who want to kind of learn a new skill that can be useful in many areas of their life. So there's, we kind of like formulate it like a school because we're all about fun over here, right? So there's the playground of the school, and then there's the classroom. So the playground is our free part of our community. You can come in. We have like a share your sketch notes channel. We've got free resources in there. That's where we held our World Sketch Note Day, which was on January 11th, and we had like a few hundred people come in from that event. And so that's sort of the playground area. People can come in, get to know each other, and that's really fun. And then there's the classroom. That's the paid option for people who want to deepen their skills a little bit more. We've got like weekly studio hours where people can come ask me questions, in-house and special guest workshops like the ones that I mentioned, and guest interviews of people who are on a similar journey. Like it's not like, oh, they're the professional, but they're just like along, like kind of peer learning in that way. So yeah, it's been really fun. I launched it last year and we went through like a refresh over Christmas and into the new year this year in 2024. And it's been really fun to have a focus on building community and being able to teach these skills to a variety of different people who want to use it in a variety of different ways. And I'm always like, it's fun as someone who's hosting and putting together this community. I'm always learning about how people are using it and what, things that they are struggling with. Like someone asked in the community on our studio hours call this week around, like, should I focus on beauty or should I not? So we had like a big conversation about, like, well, what are your goals? Like, where do you want to get to? Where do you want to get your skills to? Where should you focus, right? If you only, because we only have so much time as human beings, right? We're all very busy, right? So learning the skill should be fun, it should be useful, and you should be able to apply it in so many different areas of your life, right? To make it worth the time and energy to learn it, right? So, and it doesn't have to be scary. And I love being people's cheerleader and cheerleading them on in the process. And so it's been a really beautiful exercise and learning on how to put together a community, how to build a community online. It's actually like quite a unique thing to try to do. I think it's the building community in person over like a shared vision or a goal, like you're doing something in your own like physical community. I think that can be, I don't want to say it's easier. Like I've done it. Like I do a lot of like stuff with like art in my community, like my local art community. It's just a whole different thing trying to build community online and really create a safe space that's truly a safe space, right? Because I think we, you know, say, oh, it's safe, you can share whatever, but like people question, like, is it really a safe space for me to share whatever? Like, really, truly? So that's, you know, so we, the beginning of the year, really grounded ourselves in what are the values, what's the energy, and how do we actually create safe space? How do you actually support people, and what does that look like? So yeah, it's been a fun journey of creating this Sketchnote school, and I've learned a lot in the process, and I think it's really fun to be able to introduce this in a way that can be really like non-threatening and like lower barrier to entry for people who want to just play around.
So, how do people find you?
Sketchnote School everywhere. Sketchnote.school, Sketchnote School, Instagram, Sketchnote School, YouTube, all things Sketchnote School. I was really mostly like my professional work is under my original business name of Mind's Eye Creative. So, but I've decided that, you know, I'm still doing that work and I still really love it, but everything is pretty much rebranded for Sketchnote School. Yeah, I still have mindseyecreative.ca. People could go and be like, what does she draw? What do these pictures look like? You know, you can go there, check them out. But yeah, so Sketchnote School is all thing learning how to Sketchnote, which is really fun.
Wonderful. Now you're doing this with three children. So how old are children and how is that working for you, balancing
Oh
work
my
and
gosh. Great
focusing?
question. Great question. So I have girl, boy, girl, 10, 8, and 5. And it's interesting because my oldest daughter, she was 6 months old when I took that one day course I mentioned way in the beginning of our conversation. All I've ever known is doing this and trying to build a business, now trying to build this kind of honestly like second business, Sketchnote School. I've only ever done it with children, especially young children. So I don't know any different. I think I would have been way spoiled if I would have started all this, had this under me, had it all figured out, and then had kids. I feel like that would have been a harder transition for me, anyways. So it's all I've ever known, having to be flexible, having to change things last minute. And, you know, like, is my husband going to be home to watch the kids so I can do this job? And before 2020, when they were really little, I was traveling all the time. Like, I was on a plane 3 or 4 times a month to go to these meetings and conferences. So COVID, honestly, for me, was a blessing in disguise because it forced me to figure out how to work online. And luckily, I had a client base that was happy to do that. So I actually made it through COVID decently well, surprisingly. But yeah, it definitely has its unique challenges. Like yesterday with the snow day, I was like kind of working, kind of not, kind of, you know, a little bit here and there. You know, so feeling a little bit more pressure today to try to do the things I was going to do yesterday, now to try to do today. You know, so there's always that kind of stuff, but it's, yeah, like I said, it's all I've ever known. So I just don't know any different, and I'm okay with that. Yeah. And they're great little humans. They're like my favorite people. Like I made them, so they're pretty great. And
Love
yeah,
that.
you know, like I, and it's fun because, you know, I now that especially my 10-year-old, like I'm teaching her how to do sketchnoting now. And you know, it's fun to be able to share in some of those things. And we're a pretty goofy family. We have a good time. So yeah, there's a lot of silliness and joy happening over here. You know, obviously with its moments of just regular children meltdowns and all those things, but you know, it's fun, and you know, I don't know if I would have had it any other way, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Beautiful. So now a personal question. What gives you
Yeah.
the most happiness and fulfillment in your life at this point?
Oh my gosh. Well, I feel like I want to steal my answer and say like my kids because I was just talking about them. I think for me, like I'm always challenging myself. And when you challenge yourself to do something you've never done before, even though you have this desire to do it, it can be very scary. So I think like with this community and some changes that I've been making in my work, you know, there is an element of worry and fear and all of those things, but I've been trying to also channel the reason why I'm doing it in the first place and come from a place of like enjoyment and happiness and like, why am I doing this? Like, I made a choice to do this for goodness sakes, the change doesn't have to be scary. I think the fear and worry and all those feelings like have its place, you know, because it's telling you like, oh, you've never done this before. We don't know if it's going to work out. I think there's that, but I think if you can recognize those feelings and be like, okay, those are real. I get it. You're just trying to keep me safe, brain. I get it. It's fine. But trying to like lean in on the joy because I feel like, you know, with these changes and building Sketchnote School, like I have to be joyful in doing it because I'm not going to help anybody. I can't create the space I want to create if I'm in constant fear of it not working out, right? So you have to like live in the joy and the feeling that it's already as successful as you want it to be, right? So I think that's where it's an interest. It's kind of like the same feelings I had when I first started. You know, building my live illustration and graphic recording business. It's all those same feelings. It's like, this is really scary, but it's also really fun. And those, like you're saying, those two parts like exist in the same space. So
That's
trying to like remind myself, like, this is supposed to be fun. Like, I don't always, but this year I did like, you know, they're like a word of the year. So usually my word of the year is something very like, I'm gonna produce. It's like, I'm gonna do things, like I'm gonna be productive, right? So I've been trying to kind of change that sort of energy. And so my word of the year this year is fun, right? Like I wanna have fun. Like I feel like my work is really fun. But then there's also like you're also building business and structures, and like it's still a business, right? And business is not always fun, right? So, you know, how so I've been trying to seek out like I think from the surface level, everyone might be looking like, oh my gosh, that Ashton, she's having so much fun over there. And I am, but there's also all the behind the scenes of things that people don't see that are not fun. And so I think I let some of that stuff get to me too much, and I don't have as much fun in my work as I could. And then that sort of bleeds into my life a bit, right? So I am on a mission this year to just try to infuse more fun into my life overall. So that's sort of like part of me trying to bring, you know, to a very long answer to your question around like happiness and fulfillment. What does that look like? Just so trying to have that as like something I'm actually focusing on, right? Instead of like just being like, oh, well, I'm not happy by like default. It's like, no, I'm like making like a like actual like plan. Like,
Plan to have
okay,
fun.
plan to have fun, plan for more happiness, right? Like, yeah, it's not as especially if you're like a hashtag overachiever like me, it's actually kind of hard to do. Because you're just always in this like achieving mode, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast today and for teaching us about sketchnoting. It's been really fun, actually.
Yay! There we go. There we go. Check
So,
mark.
yeah. So I have one last question for you. What is your best advice on living an incredible, amazing life?
Yeah, it's interesting because you asked this to me before in the pre-questions. I'm like, I don't know how I answered that question. So I'm going to answer it how I feel in the moment. And maybe I'll just wrap it all up what we were just talking about. I think it's about what we focus on. Like, I did not understand the work on my mind I would have to do when I went into business for myself. Like I've told people before that I spent just as much time on my mindset work than I did on like the actual craft, like the actual building, like structures and my actual drawing skills. Like I spent more time on that than anything else. And that I think was the biggest surprise because I knew once I was sort of thinking all these things that I was going to be my biggest block to my success. It wasn't going to be anything outside of myself. It was going to be me. So I think how we view ourselves, the work that we do on ourselves, and all of those things are a huge contributing factor to the answer to your question, right? So I'll just leave it at that. How's that?
It sounds awesome. Thank you so
Yeah.
much for being on
You're
today.
welcome.
And we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.